everyone. Welcome to another episode of a show that pretends to be a retro TV show. Right? That's us.
That's us.
That's us. So, Retro Rewatch. That's us. No, the show is Retro Rewatch. We rewatch retro TV shows. Actually, we don't just pretend to. And if I say we, then I mean Jeff Gamet and me. And I have Jeff Gamet with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Patrice Brindamore. How are you?
Nice. And I think I said we have Jeff Gamet with you. Always a good start already.
But also technically true, because whoever is listening right now, I am with you.
Yes, that is true. You're also with me.
And I'm also with you. And Patrice, you are also with them.
Wow.
I feel we're so close. Or we just started a cult.
We just started a cult, I think.
All right, this is going to be lucrative.
It's going to be lucrative. Yeah, so we're still rewatching Stargate SG-1. We're still in Season 3. If you're listening to us for the first time, hey, welcome. If not, then you probably know how this goes. And the episode is Season 3, Episode 15, Pretense. Mm-hmm. The episode where Jeff had predictions and they turned out to be all wrong.
At least for this episode, I was completely consistent with my predictions.
You said some alien species or humans living somewhere appear to be polite, but that's a pretense for what's really going on.
Okay, now that I think about it, if I really, 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 really stretch it, I can say I kind of got it.
But not really. But the Goa'uld were never polite, so
that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. No, Patrice, I do realize I had to stretch it so thin, it was like maybe one molecule thick.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's just jump in. Let's just do it right away, as we always do. Some general information. So we're now into the 2000s with this show. January 21st, 2000, we returned. I think the last episode was, I think, about beginning to mid-November 1999. So about 2 months later.
So this is the very first episode of the new century.
It is. It is. November 8th, 2000 in Germany. So Germany was a year behind.
Earlier this time.
This time they basically continued. I mean, they were really behind anyway, so it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah.
IMDb rating, 8.1 out of 10. So, respectable, I would say. Respectable. Mm-hmm. We have a returning writer, Catherine Powers. Mm-hmm. Might remember her from some good episodes, some not good, not so
and
good episodes.
Some not so good. Yep.
Yeah. We have David Worry Smith as our director. Also, like, we know him. We've worked with him. It's nothing new, I would say. I could have looked up what his last episode was, but of course I didn't. Season 3. He was in Season 2. Holiday was the last episode, Season 2.
Oh, okay.
So it's been a while, and for Catherine, the last episode was Season 2 episode Out of Mind, kind of with excerpts, but really Serpent Song was the last full episode that she wrote.
Okay.
So there's that. We have some guest stars, I think. Not a lot of new faces. I think most of them we know, with some notable exceptions. Of course, Alexis Cruz is back as Gaara or Clorel. Played also Raoul in the original Stargate film, I have noted down here. Just FYI.
Oh, okay.
We have, again, back Frida Petrani as Leah from The Nox. We have, I think that is a new face, as far as I remember, Marie Stillen as High Chancellor Travel. Don't think we had her before.
I didn't recognize her.
I think she's new. Known for Da Vinci's Inquest, for example. A Canadian actress.
So, another show I don't know about.
Yeah.
I'm horrible about knowing about shows.
We have, of course, Garvin Sanford as Narim. Recurred, came back. We've seen him a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And he also returns in the 4400. Don't know if you know that show.
I'm aware of the show. I haven't watched it.
Yeah. We have Kevin Durant as Sipekna, the Goa'uld. A lot of interesting credits. Lost, The Strain, X-Men Origins, Wolverine, more recent things. And this is his debut on Stargate. So, new face. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm assuming we'll see him again.
Maybe, maybe not. I have a comment about him later when we see him in the show, on the episode.
I think I'm going to have comments too.
We have Bill Nicolai as a technician, showed up a couple of times, and Peter Kufluk as Technical Sergeant Connor, uncredited, but does appear. So just little thing.
He's finally getting his credit.
No, he still didn't get his credit.
Well, on our show.
On our show, that's true. Also on websites and stuff these days. We have some interesting things. First and foremost, I think I teasered it before that the German title, as always, was very, very spoilery.
Mm-hmm.
So the German title is Die Tollan Triade, the Tollan Triad. I mean, Triad, you're like, okay, what is that? But Tollan gives you a clue where it's happening, at least.
You know, the only way they could have made it more spoilery is if they called it Skara and Chlorel's Tollan Triad.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, episode, of course, provides closure to the Skara-Chlorel storyline that began in the pilot. So it's been a while. 60-ish episodes, I think. Finally, Chlorel gets his closure.
With this episode, we really get the wrap up of the characters that were introduced, like secondary characters that were introduced in the pilot episode.
Well, except for Apophis.
Well, Apophis, I guess you're right. He's still an ongoing character.
Yeah, he's still there. But yeah, at least the most of the other characters with this, we wrap up. The Triad Justice System was created for this Tollan society, specifically for this episode. So this was something they wanted to invent. It's not something you see in our systems that we know of, at least. I'm not aware of that we have a triad system like that.
It doesn't seem like it would be a very effective system.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting that you have basically four parties, but I mean, one is always going to vote for themselves. The other one is going to vote for themselves. The neutral one is kind of a swing vote. And then I don't know what role the chancellor actually played in this. Is it kind of more?
I think supervisor.
Supervisor, yeah. So it's basically the neutral really makes the decision because the others are going to vote for themselves anyway. So,
right.
Yeah, interesting system. We'll talk about that at the end. The urban outdoor scenes of Tollana were shot on the main campus of Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, BC.
And they've shot there before.
They have. Yes, we've been there before.
Yeah.
They added some digital domes to the distance where Vancouver would usually be visible on the horizon to kind of hide that.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Despite all of that, I think it was a very fitting setting. Like it looked alien enough that you're like, oh yeah, that could be an advanced civilization somewhere.
Yeah, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, of course I recognized the outdoor locations.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter. It works. Yeah.
It's like the, what was it, downtown Vancouver location that is Washington, D.C., stuff like that. It's good enough. There is shows that I've commented on that where it's like, oh, this is Vancouver. It looks like New York.
Yeah, it does. Yep.
Yeah. So that's it for now. I have a couple other things I want to mention later, but
Well, I'm looking forward to those.
Mm-hmm. Should we just jump in?
Let's do it. That's kind of how the episode starts. It just kind of jumps in.
It jumps in and it's very short. Very short. So we start in space, some planet. There's a death glider that's being shot at in space, kind of trying to evade big motherships. And then all of a sudden, some energy weapon from the surface of the planet basically destroys both motherships.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the glider crash down on the planet, and there's some people rushing over. The clothing I noted didn't look super futuristic. It looked like just jeans and like a hoodie of some sort.
It looked like they had an old Navy on that planet.
Oh, probably, yes. Yeah, that was probably exactly where it came from. Maybe they do. Who knows? Maybe that's the first off-world old Navy. And they're like, hey, like, they have a new planet. They need clothes. So,
right. So let's sell them stretchy jeans and
hoodies. And zip-up hoodies.
And hoodies. And zip-up hoodies.
Yes. So inside the glider, like when they approach it, there is Skara, and he's very hurt, and he says, help me. That is it. Like, it probably the shortest opener, at least I can remember. I mean, was that like 30 seconds? It wasn't very long.
It was not very long.
Yeah. Yeah. But interesting. I don't know what you were thinking.
I thought it was, I thought it was nice and tight,
mm-hmm.
and they gave us an exciting-ish setup, mm-hmm. for Skara, being back for an mm-hmm. episode.
Yeah, exactly. You know what it reminded me of a little bit?
Hmm.
The episode with Apophis. Where he crashed on the Tok'ra planet. I think was it the Tok'ra planet? Yeah. And he crashed there and asked for help. Kind of similar to that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but now, I am with you.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar.
Yeah. So, interesting opener, I would say. Definitely intriguing. What's going on? We don't know anything. I mean...
Yeah, we don't know what planet we're on. We don't know anything about these people that find Skara.
They have apparently some very advanced weapons that they can basically shoot down two gold motherships without any problems whatsoever.
Right. And they have an old Navy.
They have an old Navy, yes. True. So we come back after the intro. We're at SGC. There's an alarm. Incoming wormhole. There's no signal, like no identification signal. And then the iris starts warping. And I think, mm-hmm. I think it's Jack is like, is it supposed to do that?
That's very Jack.
Yeah. I had a little problem with this, but we'll get to that in a second. Because a cat comes through. Mm-hmm. And I recognize the cat. I'm like, oh, it's Schrodinger.
Yeah, I recognized the cat as well.
Yeah.
And so well done, Stargate writers, for creating a cat that's memorable enough that even though it's in only part of one episode,
I know what I'm looking at. A long time ago as well. Like, it's been a while. Yeah, no, that was a good setup. And then, of course, I think Carter recognizes it, and she's like, oh, it's the cat that I gave to Nareem, and then there's Nareem. The iris is still closed, yeah. I had a little problem with that, because as far as I remember, SGC gave them GDO, garage door opener.
Huh. I had forgotten about that.
As far as I remember, they exchanged, when SGC got the communications thingy from Nareem, I think they got a GDO. So I'm like, okay, this is a nice setup. I think
you're right.
This is a nice setup, and it's a funny story. Have they lost the GDO? Or were they like, that's beneath us. We're not going to use it. We're just going to walk through it.
Well, they are kind of arrogant.
That's true. That is true. But Nareem usually isn't. Not as much, at least.
And that's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't. Maybe they don't have the for all their technology, they don't have the ability to replicate AA batteries.
That is possible. That is literally possible. That they're like, we couldn't charge it. Like we couldn't make it work. It was broken.
It was broken.
Yeah.
It's been flashing 12. We don't know what to do.
Exactly. So Narim comes through and he's like, I'm here to deliver a message from our highest governing body. Colonel Neil, the Tolan Courier requests the presence of you and your team for Triad.
And so now we have a new thing, which means we need to have it explained.
Yes. And where would that
happen?
This
is one. Right. And when we need an explanation, I always know right where we go. Mm-hmm. And when we have a setup like that, I know I'm always right when I say we're going to the exposition room.
Yes, we are. I mean, sometimes it's an exposition cargo ship compartment or an exposition something else.
Or an exposition hall or tent or what. But
exposition pit.
Exposition pit.
Yeah, we've done it all.
Yes.
But there's always something like that. So we get an explanation that the Triad is an ancient ceremony of justice, quite honorable. Doreen says. Oh.
Well, good thing that he lets us know it's honorable.
Yeah, very, very honorable. The decision Triad must reach is of great concern to an old friend of yours. He's an Abedonian by the name of Skara.
Dun, dun, dun. And now everyone's like, wait, what?
So Carter has a question, though. She's like, so how did you end up on that other planet? We sent you to the Nox planet because there wasn't a gate on Tolana. So how did you come back? Basically, through the gate. And Narim is like, well, the Nox and the Tolan were able to devise a way to get us there.
So they teamed up and
did something. Did something. We'll see in a minute what they did. So of course the team gears up and off they go to Tolana.
And here's where we get something that I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Because it's a Stargate that doesn't look like a Stargate we've seen before.
No, it looks big. It looks different. A little bit smaller.
Apparently. But it also looks more modern.
More modern, more futuristic. It's brand spanking new. And they built it. And Daniel just comments on it, way smarter than we are. He's right. Yeah. And Jack's comment is, ours is bigger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're both right. Daniel makes the way smarter than us joke a couple times in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they go into the building. They go through a hallway, and there's a beam that kind of scans them, and that disables their weapon. Which Jack is not happy about.
No. And I mean, there's no warning about this either. No, it's just now done.
Narim does not understand why. He's like, so why? Like, you don't need weapons. We're safe here. Like, why is that a problem? And Narim says, no harm will come to you. The Tolan will guarantee it. To which Jack says, is that a money back if you're not completely alive guarantee?
Which is very Jack.
Yeah, very Jack. He's right. He has a point, I think. But yeah, so interesting. So we go to the courtroom. And we meet a new face.
Oh, yes. I keep wanting to call her Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. Kind of, yeah. Judge Judy is there. Hi, Chancellor Treval. And she introduces them, and then she says, your seeker will decide which one of you will be Archon. And they're like, what's a seeker? What's an Archon? We don't know anything. Narim did not explain shit. Like, we were in the exposition room, but we don't know anything. Really.
Right. And aren't Archons from the original Star Trek series?
Maybe. Archon, yeah. So she explains, in Triad, there are two arguing parties called Seekers. Triadic law requires one Archon who is sympathetic to each cause, and one neutral Archon. The Archons argue the dispute until a decision is reached. And with that, they go to Skara.
So it is cool seeing them back with Skara again. Mm-hmm. And yeah. The way they make it clear to us,
yeah,
when we're talking with Skara versus Chlorel,
yeah,
in this episode, I thought was interesting because we've already established a system for that, but
what they do here is interesting. Because that's exactly where we're getting to now. So we go to the cell and
there's Skara. Sorry.
No, you're literally where we are now.
Oh, go me.
We go to the cell and there's Skara. Or is it Chlorel? Because he has a red light on his chest. And then it changes to blue. And then all of a sudden it's Skara. And that was the thing you mentioned, right? The prop that they introduced here. This is like, it uses like a blue or red light, basically showing which personality is in control. It was, of course, custom made for this episode, but it's a very, very simple and very, very effective way of showing that, right? Because you always know who's talking, and Nareem does some exposition. Maybe his cell is the exposition cell now.
Now we have an exposition cell, yes. Yeah,
because he says, the Tolan designed the device worn about his chest. It suppresses the Gold's ability to silence its host. The Gold and host are free to speak at will. The device cannot be removed as long as Chlorel and Skara are our guests. The indicator on the front prevents one from pretending to be the other. Red indicates Chlorel, who speaks blue, Skara. So I think that's an important part. Like, it's not just that you can switch and it's kind of a switcher. No, it also shows you who is who.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that Skara would pretend to be Chlorel, less likely, I would say. That Chlorel might pretend to be Skara, probably
much higher.
Probably going to happen. So.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Jack says, nice device. We'll take a dozen.
And, you know, this would be a nice device to share.
Yeah. Yeah. Which Nareem, of course, says, yeah, you know our rules, like, haven't changed.
we're not sharing anything with you.
I don't know. One thing I found odd a little bit is that Jack seemed to be not super happy to see Skara.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I don't know what that came from, where that comes from. Maybe the shit they've gone through in the past where, like, I mean, he was almost shot and just, like, stuff like that. I don't know. It was just interesting. Didn't seem to be so happy to see him.
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe skeptical, or maybe they wrote the scene in such a way that they could highlight the red and blue light, and there just wasn't time for anything else in the scene.
Yeah, but it's
although
the way
Jack could have smiled.
Yeah, exactly. The way Jack was, like, interacting with him was more the thing that I noticed. Like, he didn't have to say anything, but, like, just the way he looked at and whatever. It was just weird.
I'll blame Catherine for that.
Yes. So the decision the Seeker still has to make is, like, who will be Archon? And I think he says, like, I don't know, Daniel's quite smart, but Jack is kind of, like, has a lot of courage, so he picks both. Something like that, he said.
Yes, and everyone is like, sure, you can do that, but it's still only one vote.
Yeah, exactly. I think that happens actually in the courtroom in a second. I think you're right. I think Nareem says that in that room. I think so, at least.
Well, it's very plausible I've got the wrong order.
Yeah.
I do have a track record.
And we also learned that the Tolan blew away two of Herror's motherships.
So now we know it really was the Tolan that mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we also know who the bad guy is.
Not like it was a surprise at that point.
No, not really. So we go to the courtroom. And it's time to start the triad. I said almost trial, but it's a triad.
Right. Similar to a trial, but
with different. A D. But with yes. A D.
It's a trial with a D.
Yeah. So Chloral's Archon is Tsepekna. That's his name. It's the guy with dead plans on his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, yes.
Yeah. So the costume and the headdress were actually not an accident. They're designed to reflect Tsepekna's origins as a Mayan deity with a little bit of a Hawaiian punch color scheme.
Okay, I was not picking that up.
It was became a little bit of a talking point because it was so ridiculous.
Oh yeah, it's all right. I will just tell you straight up right now. I could not take that character seriously through this entire episode. His costume, his makeup,
all over the top ridiculous. Which, to be fair, probably works because Goa'uld are over the top ridiculous. So,
yes, that's true. But also, when he's trying to convey, I'm dangerous, I'm angry, you should be afraid of me, and he does a little snarl,
and you're like, oh, okay.
And it's like, oh, bless your little lizard heart. Just stop.
Snake, not a lizard.
Bless your little snake heart. No, I could not take that character seriously.
No, you could not. You could not. So we get introduced to the third neutral Archon. Who is it? None other than Leah from the Nox. We've seen her before.
You know, at this point, she's a recurring role.
Oh, yeah. Not so. I mean, maybe.
Guess so. She's been in...
not too many episodes.
The fourth episode
been in? Yes, I think. Yeah, probably four, because there were two entirely Tallinn episodes, and I think one other. Probably something like that.
And it's probably a lot easier to get this actress than Armin Shimmerman.
Yeah, third. The Nox, Enigma, and Pretense. Third episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably easier to get Armin Shimmerman, that's true. But I mean, he's been in other episodes too, so it's not that they couldn't get him. But I mean, sometimes you also want something different. And I think she works better in this setting than I think Armin would have worked.
Okay, yeah, I'll agree with that, yeah.
So, Jack thinks they've already won because Leah is fair and insightful, is a fair and insightful person who will vote our way. Besides, she likes us.
Yeah,
but Daniel has a point. He's like, well, Leah likes everyone. That's the Nox way.
And Daniel is right.
Yeah. And then Teal'c chimes in, and he also has a good point. He says, the Nox are not in conflict with the Goa'uld. You may recall they saved the Pophis when you attempted to eliminate him.
Yeah, and...
Giving
us another recurring character.
Yeah. So Teal'c is like, but Teal'c Wiki has some extra bit because he's like, Tsepekna was one of Apophis's most loyal underlords. Yeah, he does. He does like feel like a
suck body, up.
I wanted to say body part liquor, but suck up works as well.
I have the completely wrong image in my head right now, and
so Jack gives some orders. He's like, Carter, you and Teal'c keep an eye on Zippy's kids, because of course he didn't come alone. He has Jaffa with him.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
So observation here.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine really likes writing smart-ass comments for Jack.
She does.
in his dialogue.
She does. I mean, but also it is a very Jack thing.
Oh yeah, it is.
I mean, he will mouth
I'm not
off.
Complaining.
He will mouth
observing.
Off to just about everybody. Not always for his best. I mean, remember in the was it even the previous episode?
Yeah, he got shot in the leg for
exactly.
being mouthy.
One of the previous episodes, he got shot in the leg for being mouthy. So I think it's just him. But she does, and she does have some really good ones. Like Zippy and the kids is really,
mm-hmm.
or Zippy's kids in this case.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yep.
So we go to the courtroom, and now the court is in session. Officially. I think they... Don't they light something even? Something happens. I don't remember.
I do not remember.
Yeah. So, Travel introduces the topic at hand. This dispute. Wow. Hard, involves two sentient beings who inhabit the same body. Both have requested sole use of the body, and therefore we must establish right of priority over the body to whom does it belong. And Jack, of course, right away starts to argue and whatever, because, you know, he cannot follow protocol. We know that from previous episodes, that he does not know when to shut up in certain situations.
Oh, right. Yep.
Remember the negotiation with the Goa'uld, and the Goa'uld usually don't take that very well. So Zippy is like, Your Eminence, I must request that the human contingent follow decorum appropriate to such an auspicious body as this one. Oh my god. Yeah, so let's start the arguments. So Zippy has one. So Zippy starts a thing, and Zippy has one. He says, until 3 years ago, the humans on Abydos lived under Goa'uld law administered by Ra. Now, by that law, they were Goa'uld property. Lord Chlorel merely took what was already his. Which, of course, Jack has a hard time not, like...
yeah.
I'm not going against. I mean, he kind of wants to say something, and then he realizes he I think Travel always said, Travel sent him, like, a look, and then he shut up.
Yeah, Jack is clearly having...
Yeah.
Issues with this whole thing.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but that's the hardest part, right? Like, everybody gets their time to speak, and when it's not your time, you have to shut up. And I have a hard time doing that, and I think Jack does too.
He clearly does.
Yeah. But we do get Skara's perspective on this, right? So Skara says, I was born to this body, free of the demon Chlorel. He stole my body on Abydos. I would have married, had children, grown old, and died. The Goa'uld took more than my body. He stole my life.
That's a very compelling argument, right?
That is a killer argument.
Mm-hmm.
Like what they really took. Daniel does make a good argument too, that the people of Abydos didn't believe they were slaves. Because Ra enslaved them more through superstition and through fear, not like chains and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they believed they were still free. Does that make a sense?
Yeah, also an important point.
Yeah. So with that, we get a quick interruption by some stomping. Because Teal'c and Carter are... very obviously following the Jafar around.
Yeah.
They're not even trying to hide it very well.
So I didn't realize it till just now, but we've hit the point in this episode really where Amanda Tapping,
mm-hmm.
she could just not show up anymore and no one would notice any difference. Her big role in this episode was holding the cat.
Yes. Right. Holding and recognizing the cat. I think I don't think there's much more that happens afterwards, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit later. We get a little scene with Nareem later. That might be. But that's about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'll get to that in a sec.
But it's a scene that even if we didn't have it,
yeah,
with her, it could have happened with someone else.
Yeah, that is true. So back to the courtroom. Zippy makes the argument, and I'm gonna use Zippy now.
I am up for this. Absolutely. I am so, on board.
So Zippy makes the argument that humans make judgments that animals are lesser than humans. Right? I think he asks about how do you
see like pigs or something.
Pigs or whatever. Yeah. Okay. And the girl will do the same with humans. They see them as animals. Lesser beings. Jack tries to argue against that a little bit, and he's like, but humans are self-aware, and they're more intelligent.
Yeah, and Zippy's not buying that argument.
No, he said, is that not a matter of perspective? Just like a human considers itself more intelligent than a pig, might a pig consider itself more intelligent than a rat? Yeah, probably. My point is that...
if it's self-aware...
Yeah. Well, maybe it is. Yeah, my point is that the Goa would consider ourselves more intelligent than humans. Our technology is more advanced than yours. Our mere knowledge of the universe is more advanced than yours. Good argument.
I'm
not sure I want to follow it, but it's a good argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it shows a little level of hypocrisy, also in human society. It's not as cut and dry. We can say what we want, but we do make those judgments.
Mm-hmm. And apparently so do the gold.
Yeah. And we've done this to human beings, to be honest. He doesn't make that point, but we've done this to human beings. We are worth more than another race, for example.
Yeah.
Happens all the time, even today.
Yeah, and our species does have a history of enslaving our own.
Unfortunately, yes. We don't need Gorwald for that.
Yeah.
Hey, that is a good thing we should talk about in after the episode, because I think that is a point that we should follow up on.
Okay.
The parallels between Gorwald and human beings.
Yeah, I think it would make some people uncomfortable.
Yeah, we should maybe talk about that later. So, okay. Daniel has a good counter argument, because he says you took human knowledge when you took humans as hosts, just as you took knowledge from other species. The Stargate isn't your technology; you just took that. As far as we know, nothing you have came from you. So clearly, the evidence is not that you're more intelligent, just more parasitic.
Bingo. And and that's a really good argument too.
Yeah. Travell shuts that down a little bit because she's like, aren't we a little bit off topic now?
Yeah, you know, the timing for that line was really good, because at this point in the episode, I'm like, they have lost the plot. They have gone off topic.
Yeah,
I mean, I knew that they hadn't really lost the plot, but it felt like this whole thing was just so far off topic. And then Judge Judy shuts it down.
Yeah, but then Daniel counters. He says, if I may, Your Eminence, I don't think we've ventured away from the central topic at all. What we're trying to point out is that the Goa'uld steal what they possess, as they have, in fact, stolen Skaara's body. And that is the point where Jack comes in. Because he was struggling a little bit with the format of this triad and what arguments to make and how, and they can only speak with one voice and all of that. But I think now he's like, okay, Daniel has had some good points, but I think I can make one too.
Right. It's like Jack has finally figured out how to play this game.
Yes. So he says to Skaara, you once told me you'd rather die than live another day as Gorwald. Why? And Skaara says, what I suffer each day is worse than death. Jack says, for example. And Skaara says, I remember the demon stretching out my hand to kill Daniel, the husband of my sister. There was nothing I could do to stop it, and I've seen many more, far worse atrocities than this. To which Zippy only says, the host witnesses nothing, since nothing is in the of the host survives. You know, that old argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we can go to that argument, though, we have to switch to our, I don't know, Z plus plot?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm glad that you have good notes, because now I know where we're going. Mm-hmm. And I had completely forgotten about this.
Yeah.
And which is lame, because it's actually an important moment.
Yeah.
To set up more of the episode.
Yes, it's a kind of a parallel stream that's happening. It's not super important until the end when it is.
Right. But we need these little bits.
Yeah.
So that we have the setup for the end.
Well, that, and I think it's also always good to have a little bit of the courtroom is very intense. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have a little bit other things happening. So it's not too much.
Comic relief, like watching Jafar run around.
Yeah. So the Jafar running around, they're doing something with a device to, I assume, the weapons. Like, it's not clear, but they look like little big domes of some sort. And I think they're the weapons.
That was my assumption.
Yeah. So they're doing something. Carter and Teal'c are watching them. That's it. We go back to the courtroom. Good enough. Daniel has a good point. So we go back to the argument that nothing has survived. And he says, but how could he speak at all if he hadn't survived? And this is the first time Leah jumps in. And she's like, and he spoke well. His words were not those of a remnant personality. I think that's something that Zippy had said.
Yeah, Zippy had said that there's just like little remnants, leftovers of what had been there.
Yeah.
And they kind of manifest themselves like that sometimes.
Yeah. And with that, I think they're taking a break of some sort. Because we go to the waiting room. So that SG-1 can reconvene to exchange information. And Carter and Teal'c are there to relay that information that the Jaffa are doing something to the Tollan's weapons.
How funny. I do not remember this scene at all. And in my mind, this whole thing with, hey, there's something happening with the weapons, was a discussion that was outside in a courtyard and they had to be quiet.
That's happening next. So SG-1 has basically... Of course. SG-1 has exchanged information first. And they're like, okay, we should talk to Noreen. So Carter, because she has a relationship with him, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
However that's looking like, romantic, not very clear.
It's enough of a relationship that she gave him a cat.
That is true, yeah. That is true. There's definitely something happening there. So, Noreen shows up and Carter talks to him, and he's like, Samantha, I have missed you. So you can see it's a little awkward. Just that there's something going on between the two. There's like a budding romance maybe happening, but they both don't know because they haven't seen each other for a long time, like where they stand. Right? That's my feeling, at least, that I got here.
Yeah. I mean, when he was first introduced, we could see there was a spark between them.
Yes, very clearly.
And what we're seeing now is that spark has not faded.
It has not faded, but it's also changed. Because that's the next thing that Sam says, like Carter says. She says, a lot has happened to me since I last saw you. And Carter basically shuts this down for the moment. She says, I can't have a relationship with anyone until I'm absolutely sure whose feelings I'm feeling. Do you understand? I think they were talking a little bit about the Dolinar thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be fair, long-distance relationships can be difficult, especially when they're way across a galaxy.
Yeah, something like that. And different species and all of that.
Yeah.
Had to flee their planet. Like, there, a lot of things happened on both sides. So we get to the meat of the meeting because Carter basically warns Nareem about what the Jaffa are doing, which he thinks is impossible. He's like, no, they can't do that. Our stuff is too advanced and we would detect anything they do.
Yeah, well, famous last words.
Yeah. So but he does, since it's Carter, he does take it seriously enough that he informs Travel, and they meet up with the Goa'uld, I think, at the weapon. So Travel is there, SG-1 is there, Nareem is there, and they're checking the weapon, and they can't detect anything. And
yeah. Is this where Sam says maybe they painted them?
Yes, I'm getting that's exactly it. The next
okay.
Thing. No, it's good because I have it verbatim because I think that was an interesting exchange that happened here. So Travel says our experts have been unable to find any form of tampering on any of the cans. And Carter says to Neil, maybe they were painting them, and then Travel says, I see no paint. And Carter's like, it's an Earth military expression. It means marking them as targets. And Travel says, nor do I see any markings.
Yeah.
So Carter, Jack, they kind of explain, yeah, they might be like just invisible something. And Travel says, even if that was the case, the instant one of these cannons is attacked, the rest will automatically locate the position of the attacker and destroy it. To which Jack points out, unless they're all taken out simultaneously.
And that would be a problem.
That would be a massive problem. But Travel thinks their tech is superior and thus won't happen.
And Jack gives us incredibly ham-fisted foreshadowing.
Yeah, he's like, with my, his response. Aren't we cocky?
I do remember that line. Yeah. When I remember that's right where it came in.
Yeah. So, Travel has a different idea and like why, what's going on. And she thinks this is a ploy to influence a triad. And she asks that. Which I can understand. I can understand on one level. If it were the Goa'uld, I would be like, yeah, totally, that's what they're gonna try. But she knows through the other Tollans who have met humans, and especially these humans, I think she should know that that's not the way they do things.
Yeah. So okay, so at this point, I'm trying to figure out if she's just being cocky.
Mm-hmm.
And arrogant.
I think she's arrogant. I mean, the Tollans in general are, right? They think they're superior. They have better technology. They do have better technology and understanding of technology, for sure. But they've always been, remember when we met them? They've always been pretty cocky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Right? Even if they were wrong and proven wrong at the end, and this time we'll see again.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty... pretty proud and pretty cocky. Like they think the humans are stupid. In a way, right? That they're unintelligent or not as intelligent as them, and thus they don't understand. Even though they might have a point. But so Travel shuts it down, basically. She says, okay. If you continue to pursue this matter in any way, I will disqualify you from the triad and replace you. Skara will be represented by someone else. Is that understood? And Jack has the only right answer because he says with protest. Mm-hmm. He understood the way this game is played. This is a diplomatic game.
Yeah, he's got it figured out now.
Yeah,
he's okay, like, so at this point, protest. Even though I'm in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no, completely off base with this idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's still stuck in the back of my mind. What if Judge Judy is conspiring with Zippy in some way? Maybe. And I'm like, huh, this would be a really easy way to manipulate the situation so that she gets whatever it is that she wants at everyone else's expense.
Yeah. I will note one thing about this. Remember what you just said. So all I'm going to say, remember what you just said. Write it down. Try to remember that.
I'm going to have a post-it note here that says, that said, Judge Judy conspires with Zippy.
Yeah.
And it, and
yeah,
people will see that on my monitor and they'll be like, what? And after a while, it'll be like, oh crap, I don't remember. But I remember I need to leave it up there.
Yes. I'm just saying, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just saying, remember this. Let's move on. So, okay. Sherlock Courtyard, Jack basically orders Sam and Carter. He says, just stay away from Zippy and his gaggle of Go-Worlds, okay? That is a fun bad name. Zippy and the gaggle of Go-Worlds.
Yeah.
It's kind of a swing band, maybe. Could also be rock and roll.
Ska.
Ska, yes. Ska.
Yeah, it's a ska.
It's a ska, the cover band. Okay, good. Carter, of course, disagrees, and she's like, but Jack says, I don't see a choice here. If you keep pursuing the issue, Skara's going to be represented by God knows who, and then we won't stand a chance in hell. I'm not going to let that happen. And he is right.
Mm-hmm.
Teal'c also disagrees. He's like, the Tholen have not been at war in many generations. They do not think strategically. I believe that to be a fatal flaw. So he wants to keep watching them. But Jack orders them to stand down. And I think at this point, it is the right decision.
I think Jack is making the right decision.
Yeah.
However, Teal'c is completely right with his assessment.
He is right, but sometimes when, like in diplomatic situations like that, when you're dealing with more advanced or more powerful people, sometimes you have to accept the thing that even though it's wrong, and you know they're gonna have to deal with the consequences of their own decisions. You have to accept them because you cannot. Sometimes you have to decide what you're willing to risk. And risking Skara's freedom and life is probably in this situation, and the diplomatic relationship they have with the Triad, with the Tholens, which is on top of that, of course, also at play. Like, if they're doing well in this, like, who knows? They might have a good, like, maybe they become allies at some point and can start exchanging whatever information, maybe technology at some point.
And that's a really compelling argument.
Yeah. So right there. So as wrong as it might be, and I'm pretty sure Jack is very aware that that's probably like not a good idea. Like they should keep an eye. I mean, he knows the gold. Like he knows what's going to happen.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, he told them before to watch them for that reason. But I think he makes a decision based on like more than just okay, does go all the dangerous. And I mean, to be fair, he does not know. There's no guarantee that the Tholens aren't right.
Yeah,
right. They but, might you know, have when better you're
dealing
technology.
With the Gould.
They might have better technology, like for all we know. Maybe they are more aware of what's happening.
Well, I mean, they do have the technology where they were able to very easily destroy two gold motherships.
Yeah, and disable all of their weapons and stuff like that. So, like, who's to say they don't have other things that we don't know about? So, there's a risk for sure, but I think Jack makes the right decision. Teal'c, however, does not follow that.
He has learned well from Jack.
He has definitely learned well. But in this case, Jack was not nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Like, please don't do this, but really do this.
Yeah, Jack was pretty clear.
He was very clear.
Don't do this.
He is
straight up, don't do it.
He's straight up, like, that's his decision. That's it. Teal'c, and Carter follows that, right? Because, I mean, she's in his chain of command, but Teal'c is not. He's a kind of a civilian. So he's like, I'm going to ignore that. He's also not a human. So hopefully that argument is going to hold up if it goes bad. But
you know, okay, so what you just said really made something click for me that I hadn't thought about before, because I've, you know, Teal'c is part of the SG-1 team, as is Daniel. And I see them all as part of this military team.
Yeah.
What you really have is a team of two military officers and two consultants.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, two civilian one is an enemy combatant, maybe you could say, and one is a consultant.
Right. Yeah.
It's sad. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know if that argument would hold up, like, if push came to shove. Like, I'm not sure that Tollens would see it that way and say, well, but you're with SG-1, so you...
Yeah, I don't think they would make the distinction.
Yeah, but there's at least an argument you could make and maybe try, at least. Yeah. So Teal'c approaches Leah in her room to speak with her. And he says it's about another matter. So he's very clear. She says, you must not mention Chloel or Skara. If you do, I will be forced to report that matter to the Tollen. And he's like, it's not about
him. Not going to do it. Don't worry.
Totally fine. I don't want to influence you at all. And then he says, I have become convinced that the Gwold are planning to destroy the Tollen weapon installation simultaneously, thereby preventing them from ever returning fire. The Gwold will then attack this world, and which will be then defenseless. I believe that you and I are the only ones capable of preventing this tragedy from occurring. To which Leah has a point. She's like, you and I, Teal'c, you're a strong warrior, but I am off the Nox. If you've learned anything of us, you've learned that we defend ourselves through illusion and mastery of the mind. So she's not a fighter, right? To which Teal'c says, precisely.
Oh, clever Teal'c.
Clever Teal'c. We don't know what he's planned. It's not revealed yet. But he has something in mind that is right up the Nox's alley. He needs her skills, really. And really her skills.
Yes. And clearly, illusion and mastery of the mind are very important now.
Yeah. So we return to the courtroom. And Zippy wants to make a challenge. And he says, the Tollen law does not provide for a penalty of death. Is that correct? It is. Then I wish to point out the futility of this trial. A Gorwald needs a host to survive. This is a biological fact beyond our control. If you award priority to Skara, then it has a death sentence. It is a death sentence for Chlorel. So, not a bad point, but there's a way out of that. He says, as you proved earlier in the triad, the host survives, right? So now he's conceding that point because it suits him. Earlier he was fighting it, and no, the host is not there, it's just a shell, whatever. Now he's like, no, the host survives. So if you award priority to Chlorel, both host and symbiote live. Right?
A very interesting way to manipulate the situation.
Yeah. So Jack says, well, if you want to save both lives, give us Skara and take Chlorel. The Tok'ra can put him in another host for all I care. Leah sees that, I think, for a reason, a little bit more critical. She's like, who, Colonel? Perhaps you would volunteer?
Yeah.
And Jack is like, no. No, it's a bit bad argument, I would say. So before we can go anywhere else and do anything else with this argument, we have Carter and Teal'c enter with Nori.
Okay, I had the scenes out of order. Yep. Yes,
so they enter because a gold ship has arrived. Zippy says, oh, yeah, don't look at this. My vessel is just coming. Anticipation of our victory in Triad. It's merely coming to take us aboard. Right?
Yeah.
Don't look at it.
Don't you worry your pretty little heads about exactly. that.
Don't look at it. Travell doesn't seem to agree. She's like, even so, your ship's arrival is premature and in violation of Tollan space. I must warn you that if your ship moves any closer before the conclusion of Triad, our automated defense systems will destroy it.
There is an effect that they did here okay. in this scene.
I didn't know
that. I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it makes sense that now, mm-hmm. like today, it's an effect that we might not notice. But in context of when this was mm-hmm. made, so in the year 2000, this is this is actually made in 1999.
Yes.
And then released in early 2000.
Yeah.
Judge Judy has a display that's like clear glass.
Oh, yeah.
That slides up.
Yes.
And it's transparent. Yeah. And we can see what's on the display through the display.
Yes.
So it's clearly a technology that mm-hmm. does not match anything that we've seen with anyone in any episode so far.
That's true.
And I thought the effect was actually done really well,
it
too.
Was. Yeah, it absolutely was. So now Zippy is in a hurry all of a sudden because he's like, oh, I would like to wrap up. Let's finish this triad. I'm ready. To which Travell says...
That seemed kind of abrupt.
He's like, oh, okay, your ship is here, and all of a sudden you're in a hurry. Travell says, Triad is over when all parties agree, Lord Tzipakna. Do the human Archons have any further arguments? And Jack is like, nope. I think their gold made our case for us quite nicely.
Yes, and he points to the display still showing the ship in orbit. Yes. Yep.
So, well, Travell's like, well, okay, then let's vote. So, the obvious votes, of course, from Zippy, for Clorel, from SG-1, for Skara. I think that was not a surprise. Like, I think that vote, like, those votes are useless. Like, you could just skip them because...
Right. They yes, you're right. They're useless.
Yeah. I mean, when would someone vote for the other side? I think that's probably never or very rarely going to happen. So now it's Leia. And she is like, after careful consideration, I believe that both Clorel and Skara have the right to live. But living as a host with no will of one's own is not life. Therefore, only one may remain in the body. To that end, I award priority to the original owner of the body, Skara.
And of course, Skara's happy, and Jack and Daniel are happy. And
yeah, everybody's happy. And Travell says, we will summon the Tok'ra to come to Tolana to assist in the removal of the Goa'uld Clorel. He will be removed from the host, and if he survives, will be sent to the Goa'uld world of his choice.
Which seems like a reasonable solution in this crazy
world. They're being neutral in this case and saying, like, we're not killing anybody. We're like, if he survives, hey.
Anyone's going to be able to help him survive being removed.
It's a Tok'ra. And, I mean, the Tok'ra and the Tollans together, I guess. They have a lot of technology available. So, but Zippy has other plans.
Yeah, he has an HBO ball.
He has an HBO ball under his desk. And he grabs it and says, Re Nuk Tok, something like that. Mm-hmm. I wrote it down, I still don't know. Teal'c is there and he just knocks him out. He's like, he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
That's not good.
You know, I like when Teal'c gets to be man of action.
Yeah, he does. Finally do something useful. And he knocks him out. And then we hear alarms and they rush outside. So, shit's going down.
Mm-hmm.
So, outside, we all of a sudden see beams in the sky. And no surprise to anybody, Jack says they got a deadlock on all of them, so all of the weapons. You know, I hate when people waste my time like this.
Yeah.
Right? He was right. He and the team were right. Like, yeah, they were called painting. It. They were painting them. Where's Teal'c? Don't know. But before they can really, figure out where he's gone, because he just disappeared. Like, he knocked out Zippy and then he just disappears.
And then he's gone. Yeah.
All cannons are destroyed from space at the same time, as predicted.
As predicted. And then we get Death Gliders flying in, doing strafing runs and bombing.
And we see Teal'c, and he's hiding with Leia. And Zippy has escaped, of course, because, you know, gold.
Right. That's their special way.
Yeah. So Teal'c is now to Jack, like they all meet up, and Teal'c is like, I must inform you, O'Neill, that I have disregarded your order concerning the Goa Uld. And Leia basically shimmers them away and they move into a field. I think it's an illusion, right? She's just hiding them, but she transports them basically to a field. And Teal'c says, I have requested Leia's assistance. Leia hit one cannon. Because Travall explained that it would take but one of these cannons to destroy a gold mothership.
So why not just hide one?
Yeah, so he did. Problem is, it's not firing. But apparently, because I don't know how, Teal'c figured out how to activate it, and he does.
Well, I mean, he's Teal'c Wiki. He probably just looked at the Teal'c Wiki entry for Tolan cannons.
How to activate the Tolan cannon? I still don't know. That made no sense to me. Like, how he even knew?
No, it made no sense at all.
Yeah, but he did. So,
okay. Oh wait, yes, it does make sense, and it was stupid subtle.
Okay.
There's a point earlier in the episode where Teal'c and Carter are watching Tolans at one of the cannons.
They do the testing,
and he's specifically watching while they're doing the keypad thing. Ah, and they do a closer shot on the keypad to let us know Teal'c is watching it. I forgot about that.
That's true. Yeah, okay. So.
So they explained it. It just wasn't obvious.
Yeah. So we go back to the courtroom. Now that the gliders and the ships are destroyed. And Travall is not happy, but she's also not angry. I think she's like, ended up okay, so we're just gonna ignore that. She says,
so we're gonna call this one a wash.
She's like, if you were one of my subjects, I would be forced to discipline you. However, you are not one of my subjects. Teal'c says, it could not have been done without the assistance of Leia. Which surprises everybody, because Carter's like, I thought the Nox were pacifists. And Leia says, well, I only hit the weapon. I did not fire it.
And I like Carter's response.
Yeah, she's like, you know, it's like, pretty fine line you didn't cross. And Leia is like, yes, it is. And Travell also, yes. So, and Jack is like, are you therefore indebted to us in any modest way? Like, it's really, like, he's being very diplomatic, like, this episode. Like, despite all the snark and comments, he's very diplomatic when it matters. Like, yes, he has skills. He's not as clumsy as people would think. And Travell says, I suppose that is the case. And Daniel's like, so how about giving us the plans to build one of those ion cannons? And Travall's like, you've been told our policy. That has not changed. Well, not yet anyway.
Not yet anyway. But, you know.
Yeah.
The series is young. We're only in season 3.
So the gold has been removed and will be sent back. Scar is happy. And he's also wearing Tok'ra clothes.
So my assumption was that meant Scar was leaving with the Tok'ra and was just going to hang out with him.
Yeah, sounds like it. And with that, we're at the end of the episode.
So, still was not able to take Zippy seriously through this episode at all.
No. It's not. But I mean, to be fair, he was not sent there to be the big bad or be the fighter or whatever. He's a politician, right? He's a lawyer.
True. But, you know, the little snarls and lip curls and just everything where he's supposed to come across mm-hmm. as dangerous and mm-hmm. mean.
Yeah, he's not.
He does not.
No. He absolutely does not. Yeah. So your thoughts about this episode? Like what did you think? Good, bad, interesting, fun?
I thought it was a fun episode that was fine. It wasn't on the same caliber as some of the other episodes that we have recently seen, mm-hmm. but it was still a perfectly fine episode, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Like, it's a fun little adventure episode. I mean, it has everything, right? It has like courtroom drama, Judge Judy, mm-hmm. with some. I don't know, Top Gun. Well, it's not Top Gun. Like some war thing happening in parallel. Like mm-hmm. intrigue, all of that.
Yeah, some espionage going on.
Yeah, like it got a little bit of everything, right? So
yeah,
relationship drama, a tiny little bit with Carter and Nareem, like briefly.
And we get to see Laia again.
Oh yes,
and
Nox.
And we
pacifists, all of that.
Pacifists that know just how far they can go up to the line and still remain a pacifist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like it's all there. Yeah,
so it's and, good. Yeah, and getting to see a resolution for the Scara story. Mm-hmm. Although I would have liked to have seen more interaction mm-hmm. with Scara and the SG-1 team after the trial.
Yeah, but the trial was the main thing. Like, after that, he was like, oh, I'm happy, I'm free, goodbye. Maybe we'll see him again, who knows?
It would be nice to see him again, because mm-hmm. I feel like it was like, okay, he's free, and now he's gone, and mm-hmm. credits.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I saw that the Simon Fraser University was also used by Battlestar Galactica and Andromeda. So maybe that's why you're recognized.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay. Battlestar Galactica. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway,
I can picture it now.
Yeah. There was one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in this episode, it comes out a little bit. The parallel, I mean, you know, TV shows sometimes, especially sci-fi shows, sometimes like to use sci-fi concepts and sci-fi settings to kind of put a mirror up to us as humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
To say, hey, it's shit that you have to figure out, or shit you're doing that's maybe not right.
Mm-hmm.
And what didn't click for me until now with this episode is the parallel of the Go world and humanity, right? There is, I think, no doubt people on Earth that are very much like the Go world. Power hungry, controlling, powerful for sure. They have
mm-hmm.
one way or another power through whatever means they got, through birth or through money or through intrigue or however they got it, but they have power.
Yeah.
And I mean, as we pointed out earlier, we've enslaved people. Even to this day, we sometimes have that as a race, as humans, have the tendency to see our fellow humans and other, I don't know what to call it, other living beings.
Mm-hmm.
As inferior. Right? Whether it's animals or whether it's, and some of them might be quite smart, or whether it's other humans, right? Where it's like, oh, this, whatever, the people from this place of the world are worth less than people from our place of the world, or people that look like me are worth more than people that look different than me, like shit like that. Or people that believe the things I believe are worth more than the people that don't believe the things I believe. Like, there's so many examples like that.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I really wasn't thinking about this episode in that way until you brought it up.
Yeah. I wasn't either right. until it...
But there, they really are holding a mirror up to humanity.
Yeah.
And okay, so now here's the funny thing about that for me. They straight up told us in the episode that's what they did.
Okay.
In the courtroom exchange where they're talking about how humans are perceive what we consider lesser animals.
Exactly. Pigs and rats and all of that.
And Zippy calls out the humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. For doing that.
No, it's very obvious when you think about it. But it's not it's like you can take it as it is in like a sci-fi setting about it's about gold and humans.
No, it's about people.
It's about people at the end. And as I said, I'm like there is people in the world right now that see other human beings as like they have like slavery is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as crazy as it as that is in 2025, that is still a thing. So
yeah,
there's people that are basically like straight up Googled. The only thing is they do not have an excuse of having a snake in their like back or something.
Yeah, yeah, and well, and it does go beyond slavery.
It does.
Because you also have racism and misogyny and people that see the LGBTQ plus community as something less than human. You can just go down the line and pick out any group that is marginalized.
Yeah. I mean, we and I mean, like Europeans have straight up traveled to other places in the world where people were living and have said, well, it's ours now and you're not worth anything anyway. We're just taking it.
Yeah.
Right? So it's there's a lot of parallels here.
Yeah, and that's kind of how the United States grew.
Yeah. I think a lot of places, if you think about it, like Australia, New Zealand, tons of places. Hawaii, like what happened to the Hawaiian Islands or like all of that. There's like our history is full with what did Germany do in like between World War One and then also before and during World War II. Right. Stuff like that. Like it's like
and
humans have a track record, and to quote Battlestar Galactica, all of this has happened before, and it will happen again. Right? Unfortunately, wish it didn't. Maybe this time will be different. Right? That's what they said.
Yeah, we can live in hope, but there is a track record.
Yeah. Yeah, so as I said, in this context, in this episode, very much so, also the Tolan's in a way, right? It's not just a ghoul. Like, we also have the Tolan side of, oh, we're so much smarter, we're so much better, we have better technology than you, so we don't even believe you or take you seriously. Right?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yep. You're right. Tolans are doing it too.
Western countries that have more technology kind of belittling other countries and saying, like, how could you? Or, like, don't tell us because we know better, even though they might be right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of parallels. And, like, for Stargate doesn't have a lot of morals and meanings and all of that in episodes. A lot of it is interesting and sure. some little things here or there make you think, but which sci-fi always does, but it's not so heavy on that, like Star Trek very often is.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have its moments, and I think this one is one.
Yeah, kind of funny. I didn't see it that way until we were having this discussion. But yeah, I think you're right. This is one of the more philosophical mm-hmm. episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that brings us to, I think, the end of the episode and the all-important question of how many chevrons will you give this episode?
This one is actually an easy decision for me. And this one comes in at what I will call a respectable 6.
A respectable 6. Interesting. I would have expected that you would go a little bit higher than that.
You know, I think my hang-ups with Zippy pulled me down a little bit.
Okay. Interesting. Any other reason, or is it just Zippy pulled you down? Pulled the zipper and Zippy down.
It didn't feel 7 to me.
Okay. Interesting.
But I mean, I enjoyed the episode.
Mm-hmm.
It just, this one didn't do it for me the way some of the others have.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't like the ending with and the worm's out of Scarra and he's gone and goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, there was no closure with him and, and his friends.
Yeah.
It was just, and he's gone.
Yeah. So I'm torn a little bit. I have to admit.
Okay.
It would be an easy 8 if it weren't mm-hmm. for exactly what you just said. Zippy and the ending kind of definitely pulls it down. So it's definitely not an 8.
I agree with you completely. It is not an 8.
I'm torn between a 6 and a 7. And the reason is what we just said, all of it, literally what we just discussed, the good, the mm-hmm. bad, the side, the morals and meanings and messages of it, make it a 7 for me. Easy 7. But the kind of rushed ending, actually Zippy, I don't mind as much. It kind of fun, easy to make fun of, and okay, it was ridiculous, but hey,
yeah,
hey, it was different. I'll take different. I mean, he's a different Goa'uld. Okay, I mean,
that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
We know that Goa'uld like to wear makeup because Apophis always has like a really good eyeliner. So
yeah, hey. and I have no problem with them wearing makeup.
Yeah, so hey, I mean, like, he's doing his thing, and if he likes to wear flamboyant clothes, then hey, good for him. So I don't mind that, but the rushed ending, honestly, other than the things that Scar said during the courtroom, all the other interactions I found really weird. How he interacts mm-hmm. with Jack, the ending. Like, all of that. It's kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I'm like, where I'm torn, where I'm like, it would be an easy 7 to say because of the morals, the messages. It's a fun story. Leah is interesting. She does, like, she steps up to the line. She does something. She's not being completely useless, pacifist, not useless, but mm-hmm. pacifist. She at the end, when it counts, she does step in and help. So for all of those reasons, it should be an easy 7. But I'm like, but the ending.
Yeah.
Kind of, that's the part that doesn't work. Everything else, I'm like, okay. That's the part I don't understand. Where I'm like, is it a 6? Is it a 7 for me? I think I'm going to give it a 7. Just for the morals. Like, the message, the morals are so good in this one and so thought-provoking that I'm like,
okay, I'm okay with you rating this one too high.
Yeah, I'm sad, but it's a borderline. It's fine. It's a borderline 7. Like, it's definitely not a clear, easy peasy. It's a 7. It's definitely a borderline 7 for me, because I'm like, they just pushed it over the line. If we honestly, if we had not discussed the morals and had come basically surprisingly discovered that in this episode, it would have been a 6. Like, not even a thought. Because everything else did not work.
You know, I think for me, if the ending had not been this rushed, what felt like an afterthought to the episode, I would have been much more inclined to give this a 7.
And honestly, if they had done 2 episodes instead of 1, I think it would have been better. They would have had more time to develop all the parts, the courtroom parts, but also the attack and all of that. And the end.
Yeah, and then they could have actually, excuse me, had Skara interacting with his friends.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think with that, we're closing this episode. I can tell you the title for the next one. And I'm going to look up the German title as well, just to see if it is at all. There's no German title on the page. So, Don't know. We'll have to look it up. There was one. It's just not listed here. So, Urgo. Urgo.
Urgo?
Urgo. U-R-G-O. Urgo.
Huh.
I can tell you it was written by Tor Alexander Valencia and directed by Peter DeLuise.
Oh, interesting. All right. Well, okay, here's my prediction.
Okay.
Urgo is someone's name.
Okay.
This is the person meet.
I have to write that down.
And so SG-1 has some adventure with the character Urgo.
Yeah, interesting prediction. We'll see. We'll see how right or not right you are.
It's not a like an actual word. Well, it could be a word in context of the story. Like
could be a made-up word that is another language, for example.
Exactly.
I'm not saying I'm just saying it could be.
That's what I was trying to say and was completely failing.
Yeah.
So it could be a word from another language that has significance for the episode.
Yeah, but your prediction is it's a name and they meet them and then have an adventure.
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about that once we've watched this episode. You all have watched this episode. Well, we'll meet back in this space of human interpretation of human society and morals and messages and
in our philosophical triad.
Philosophical triad. I like that word. So let's meet up. We'll meet up again in our philosophical triad to talk about Urgo. And until then, I would say thank you all for listening. Thanks, Jeff, for following along, trying to follow the plots and not get lost. And I would like people to know where they can find out more about you, what you do.
Okay. Well, I will preface that with, I think overall, I actually did pretty good at following the chronology of this episode.
You did.
There really wasn't much of a B story.
No, it said it was a Z+ story at best.
Yeah, a Z+ story. So, all right. On social media, Jay Gamet, pretty much everywhere. Most active on Blue Sky, Mastodon, and PixelFed. And then I'll pick a couple shows that I'm on. There are many more. So let's go with In Touch with iOS, Dave Ginsberg's show, and Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine.
Very cool shows, all of them. Well, you can find out more about me on my website, thepatrice.com. I'm also on some of the shows you just mentioned, like the British Tech Network shows mostly. Rarely on the others. Definitely. I've been once on the Context Machine. Fortunately, not with Brian. I'm still sold down that one.
Well,
one of these days
we'll make it happen at some point.
Yes. And yeah, you can find us, of course, on our website, but you can also reach out to us, more importantly, on social media. We're on Mastodon at retrorewatch@takehangout.social, and we're on Blue Sky at retrorewatch.com. And there's also good old email. If you just want to send us a message, maybe tell us what your interpretation of this episode was, and like what morals, messages, and meanings you took out of that, or out of this show so far. I mean, we can have a bigger conversation. Hey, send us an email. hello@retrorewatch.com, and we're very happy to talk to you. We've had some good conversations on social media about some of the last episodes.
Yeah. So
I can definitely say that. Like, there were some really cool conversations about like learning and how people learn and why and all of that. So thanks for that. Shout out to Brian. Not that Brian, yes. A different Brian.
Yeah, those conversations are a lot of fun.
Yeah, so keep them coming. Yeah, and with that, let's hide the cannon again and come back next time. See you then.